Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you along, and great to get our next guest in studio. I've been talking about him since I got the okay from him to come on the show. Kevin Olmstead is joining us now, and a name known to a lot of people, known in the fishing world, known in the guiding world as well. But the subject of the story that had a lot of people talking over the weekend, Kevin, I'm saying this seriously, sure glad to have you here sitting with us.
Hey, Sean, thanks so much. I'm blessed to be here.
We're all blessed to still have you. Describe, because I've said people need to discount most of the news reports that they've seen out there because they frame this, I think, inaccurately. Do you agree? And can you kind of talk about what happened to you and where were you and what happened?
Yeah, first and foremost, Sean, I would love to just give a shout out to all the people, you know, the state troopers, the Coast Guard personnel, the Bayou Boys, all my buddies on the east side, all my buddies on the west side, anybody that didn't know me that put their boat in and got their put their lives in harm's way in that kind of weather to come look for me. I mean, I'm humbled, so I can't express how you know, thankful I am.
But I want to talk about that moment when they arrived, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to make it.
Two of my best buds.
It's an amazing story how that happens. But the day starts off, kind of give people some background. You're fishing.
Day starts off, I'm over on the west end fishing, and you know, it's getting rougher and rougher, and so I decide to pack up at about 10 o'clock, and I get in the boat and put my kill switch on and check everything, and I'm a stickler for my kill switch. And, you know, life jacket was on the back of the console, and I took off and, of course, got 2 or 3 miles out and decided, hey, you know, something said put your life jacket on.
You're in Mississippi Sound, right?
Mississippi Sound.
And we all know how rough that joker can get.
No. And, you know, I pulled the throttle back.
Okay.
And, you know, when I make a mistake, I'm gonna fess up to it. And I pulled the throttle back, and I thought, you know, I had it in neutral, which we all do, I'm sure. And, you know, unhooked my kill switch from my pants.
Because you now got to go.
Now I got to turn around. And, Sean, I stepped 1 foot out from behind the console to turn around to get the life jacket. And a wave hits the side of the boat. I go in head first. When I come up and open my eyes, the boat, my head's bouncing along the side of the boat. So I assume the boat's still moving. And I see it go out of the corner of my eyes. And I see my ladder on the back. And I reach out. And I get my index finger, one index finger, just the tip of it over it. And when it started to pull, I got that weight, it slipped off.
So you actually did touch the boat before it left you.
I touched the boat. And, you know, when I tried to swim, of course, after it, and I had my wading boots on. So that was pretty much, it was not going to happen. So,
and for folks that don't fish, so he's been wade fishing. He has the boots on that we use to not get nicked up, or some of them are stingray proof and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're not easy to swim in.
No, sir. So
kick those off.
So never experienced panic like this. Panic mode was just, I mean, outrageous. You know, it was almost felt like you was about to have a heart attack. You were panicking so bad.
So, I mean, you're how far off a beach of any sort or off land?
Probably 3 miles.
So you're out in the middle of the sound.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of the sound. I can see that one rig, but I'm probably 2 miles, you know, at least what looks 2 miles from it to the south.
The screecher rig, the one that's there by the island.
Yeah. And, you know, it's three and a halfs out there. So, you know, every wave that comes, it comes over me. So
not only are you swimming, trying to get, and let me describe Kevin to those of y'all that don't know him. Kevin, unlike me, doesn't have a lot of body fat.
Thanks,
so
Sean.
Yeah, you've got to swim to stay afloat, let alone you're now getting waves over your head.
Yeah, I'm 135 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
And, you know, so like I said, the panic mode.
Do you see Kevin, I mean, when your finger slips off that ladder. And you watching that boat go away, disappear, going away from you?
Yeah, when it goes away like that, and I know that I can't, it didn't take but 3 seconds to realize that I've put myself in the worst situation I could put in my life.
Because you didn't complete getting the life jacket on before you were thrown out of the boat.
No, didn't get the life jacket off. The boat's still moving. No way to catch it. And I'm out in the middle of this sound with the weather the way it is. So,
my Lord.
So like I said, panic mode, unbelievably, panic mode went to survival mode when probably about 15 seconds. I mean, it was amazing how it just went from there to there. And I told myself, what's the first thing you need to do? Take the boots off. Took the boots off. Second thing, took my shorts off. I tried to get as streamlined as I could get.
Right.
Which is not hard for me.
Yes.
And so I took my shorts off. And, you know, I don't know what something or somebody was guiding me, because I'm not a survivalist. I'm not that type of person. So I tried to tie up my shorts. And, of course, the pants legs were just too hard to get in a knot. So I put them in my underwear.
Okay.
Maybe need them later.
Yeah.
I had a Columbia shirt on, one of those nice, soft Columbia shirts on that I've had forever, collar. Took it off. Tied a knot in each sleeve.
Okay.
And I don't know if I did this I was trying to do it on purpose, but either trying to get it like that, a little bit of wind got in it, and I got what, Sean, I'm going to say is the most minutest, if that's a word, I had 3 inches of air at the end of each one of those sleeves.
That was your life jacket. So
that was my life jacket. And it was so minute that, you know, my next thing was, let me test this and see if it worked. So I put it up against my chest, and I'm holding it with one hand. And I just stopped everything, and I sank, but something in my mind told me, you're sinking just a little bit slower than I would think you would sink without it. And so
there's some benefit to that.
Yeah. So my wife thinks that was all in my head, and that helped me get through this.
Wait a second. So her thought is that 3 inches of air in either sleeve of that Columbia shirt is almost like a talisman. It really didn't help anything. But inside your head,
it did. I still think it did. So, you know, I drank a lot of salt water.
What time is it now? You said it was
it's about 10 o'clock. And, you know, I could tell with that, I'm talking, it was just it's like your kid taking a balloon and maybe putting one or two breaths in it. And that's what you had, like two golf ball sizes in each sleeve. And so I could tell I didn't have to kick or tread as hard as I thought I normally would to stay up. And, I was pretty much just a victim of the tide and the winds. I had to go, you know, my whole deal was trying to stay, you know, I was trying to stay afloat, but I was trying to stay, the waves were trying to drown me, if that sounds
right. Right, because you're trying to stay afloat at the same time you got waves going over your head.
Every 2 or 3 seconds, I had to let one go over, spit it out, you know, that's where I got all the salt water in. And so I'm going to say that went on for, I knew the tide was going in. I'm going to say that went on for maybe 5 hours, because I looked like I was 2 or 3 miles from the rig, and I ended up getting to the rig, you know, which maybe 3/4 mile. I'm just guesstimating. Didn't have a clock, didn't have a watch or anything. But I knew at 2 o'clock that tide was probably going to start turning.
Mm-hmm.
And with the waves and the tide going out, going the same direction, I was going to be in really a world of hurt.
Yeah.
And, Sean, after the first hour, and I was still there, I told myself, okay, you're still here. Let's make it another hour. Let's try to make it another hour.
Are you thinking you're going to see somebody, that some boat's going to come by?
You know, and yeah, I did. But, you know, typically that area would be just loaded with boats.
It was rough. Yeah.
And for them to be able to see me bobbing up and down in 3 foot, you know, me going underwater every wave,
they'd almost have to be right on you to see you.
Right on me. So, like I said, I'm probably 5 hours into it. So I'm thinking it's 2:30-ish, maybe somewhere down the road, and I can never get to that rig. I can never do it. And I started feeling tide go out. And I said, so I focused on, there's nothing down there but maybe 2 or 3 pylons. I focused on this red number 34, and maybe the Coast Guard will let me have that sign one day, because it means
on the ICW, right?
Yeah, it's ICW. And I was able to get over to it and be right in line with it. And I think it was probably maybe 3/4 mile. I don't know.
You saw it coming up, but you're getting your angle correct.
I got my angle right. Okay. I wasn't going to it. I was still going out. There was no way it was going. The tide had probably turned, and it wasn't going to take me to anything now. It was going to take me into the Gulf. So I got over and lined myself up and head strong. You know, I'm in line with it. Let's do what we can do. And by this time, you know, I didn't think I had hypothermia. I didn't even think about hypothermia, but I could tell my body was shutting down probably about 2:30, because I was starting to convulse. And
on top of everything else, and now you're convulsing.
Yeah, my feet were locked up in the pointed position. Sean, I guess what I got in my hand? I still got that shirt clenched in one hand, and I'm trying to do the doggy paddle with one hand. I'm trying to lean on my side and do it with the other. And all those 5-6 hours, I put that shirt down between my crotch, across right. my legs, and I would lay on my back, and I would do just a slight little this just with my hands to give my legs a rest because I had to.
I can imagine. Brutal.
And so, what was 3/4 mile? And I know I felt it going. I said, "This is crunch time, Kevin." And you know, Sean, I'm gonna tell you so I don't forget in the story. You know, what I thought about was my kids and my wife. And I said, I'm not going down like this. I'm not leaving them like this. And they got me through. My kids and wife got me through.
Your desire to see your family.
It's my desire. And that determination, I am still amazed.
Works amazing
ways. It was amazing. And I talked to everybody. I talked to God more than I've talked to God. I was hard on myself. I was like a drill sergeant. You should have heard me. I'd love to have a recorder there. I mean, I was cussing at myself. I mean, I had to make myself stay pumped up. I mean, I had to. And so, what 3/4 mile? I never stopped. I never stopped that last minute. I gave it every bit I got, and I was, you know, 3/4 mile turned into a. To whatever turned into whatever, and you know, I'm thinking, I thought at that point in time I was starting to hallucinate a little bit. And meanwhile, I never saw another boat. I saw two big shrimp boats come in.
They never saw.
But they were probably half a mile off. They weren't going to see me.
You bobbing under those waves.
Yeah. So
oh
what turned into, you know, 30 yards, and it's getting dark. It's probably 6:30, 6:45, almost 7. 30 turned into 20. 20 turned into 10, and I said, I'm going to die trying. And I got to it, man, and I got to it, and it was probably 7:15, I think, because, you know, I was only on it, I think, about 20 minutes. And, of course,
us back there. What does that feel like?
So that
you finally get something to hold on to.
Okay,
to
so you finally get to it, there's your challenge, is holding on to a pylon with barnacles all over it with three foot waves. So I immediately knew I had to get to the upcurrent side of it.
Yep.
And I used I grabbed on to the barnacles with my feet and my hands as light as I could do
right.
to keep me on it
to keep
without
getting
cutting myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hard parts of your palms, your hands. And, you know, every wave that would come would go over me and it'd slam me into the thing. But I didn't care. I was on that pylon and I knew that it was crunch time. And I knew I had to be on something stationary or
yeah.
I was gone. And, you know, that if I'd have died then, I would have been happy that I'd gotten to that pylon and gave myself the best chance.
It
I
was
could
that
get.
Kind of a goal, just an incremental.
Yeah,
goal. Get
I knew
to this
it.
Thing.
I knew it. I knew at that point in time that okay, I've made it 9.5 hours.
What did that feel like? I mean, you get hold of it. It's a terrible thing to hold on to, but it had to be a victory.
Oh, it was. Like I said, if I was looking down now and I was up in heaven,
yeah,
I would have said you achieved what you wanted to do. You had to get to that pile, and there was no other way to survive if you didn't get to that pile, because they're out looking, and what they're gonna it's gonna be easier for them to see me on something stationary than floating out into the Gulf.
Absolutely.
So I made it, and still I'm looking. I saw the big plane. I saw the Coast Guard plane. I don't know what time it was, and I said, okay, finally somebody is looking for me. And the problem was is the boat didn't wash up till almost 3:30.
Right, and so that's where, and we come back from the break, I want to talk about that, because so much was reported that it was a boat crash. It was not a boat crash. It was the boat went on its own.
And
up to the north.
And it went straight to Balabatri State Docks on the jetty. Couldn't have gone to a better place.
They're looking at this boat there, but where's the driver? And that's what they're searching for.
Yeah.
We'll come back. More with Kevin Olmstead right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And let's get right back into our conversation with Kevin Olmstead. You heard the story over the weekend for so many people. It was a kind of a story without detail, without emotion. And that's what we're changing here. Kevin, you arrive through God's providence, through the desire to see your family to that piling, that ICW marker. You said you saw the plane fly over. Then what happens?
You know, I'm still trying to hold on. And, you know, I'm just, I knew it was crunch time because my body was just really convulsing real bad. And I knew, you know.
You could only hold on for so much longer.
Yeah, I knew it was tough. And I'm going to guesstimate it was probably, like I said, I was only on that pile in 20 minutes. And I think they found me at 7:30. But I still didn't see a whole lot. I saw some boats, but I'm kind of like, okay, somebody come along, please.
Right. There's this thing that now I finally got something to hold on to. And I know they're searching, but will those clocks line up?
Yeah,
right.
I wasn't going to make it through the night. I've watched enough TV to know that you're not going to make it through the night with hypothermia. So, you know, I saw a boat. And go, and I could tell it was a dark boat. And you know, my first thought was, oh my God, that's my buddy J.O. and J.O. Bryan,
yeah.
And it was going parallel, and it looked like they just left the rig. And they were still going kind of parallel to me. And when they got by, and I'm like, oh my gosh, please. I mean, it looked like they were going to shoot, just leave and shoot over.
Right.
And it was my buddy Rick Tornay and Kyle Mitternight. And if there's two guys that you want looking for you,
yes,
they're going to be on my top five list.
Yeah, as salty as they get right there.
I mean,
yeah.
And man, you know, when I heard the whole story, you know, they launched the boat and they said, we're not leaving.
What made them turn? What made them?
You know, they're big black fishermen, and Rick told me he had the instinct. His instinct was to go do something nobody was doing, and go check any kind of structure
that I might be on.
And he told me that he told Kyle. He said, "Hey Kyle, can you see that last piling we hadn't checked?" And Kyle said, "Man, no, it's too dark." And he said, "Well, we're going to do just like blackfish, and we're not passing a piling up." And thank God, I love the guy, man. And so when they turned, I knew that they were coming my way. And, of course, I took a hand off and started splashing and making it. And Kyle was up on the front of the boat just jumping up and down, pointing to me. And I knew that – I knew I was going to – I was saved.
That I asked you about the feeling when you watch a boat disappear, the feeling when you're trying to swim to this piling. What is that feeling?
Well, when I was on the piling, there was a couple coming in, and you know, they were a ways away, and I hollered and screamed, but I didn't expect, not with that kind of waves.
But when the boat gets closer and closer,
you're just, it's the complete opposite of the first 10 minutes I'm in the water.
Is it elation?
Yeah, it's the first 10 minutes in the water, your mind tells you, I'm going to die. I'm going to drown out here. There's no way I can get through this. And then when the boat pulls up, that was all worth it. And so those guys pull up, and I'm still clutch, and I don't know where the shirt is. I mean, God, I wish I had that. Yeah, I wish I had it. And it's a great story for Columbia. And so they both pulled me up in, and of course I'm convulsing pretty bad, and Kyle's, you know, trying to keep me warm. But at this time, the Marine police was coming from behind, and he had said he saw my hat. That was all he saw, was hat. And so they tie up together, and they have to lift me over into his. And I was pretty sappy. I had to, I told Kyle the other day, I said, man, I'm sorry for being sappy. I mean, I didn't want Kyle to leave my side. I said, please go with me. And he's probably got bruises on his arms and hands. I was holding on to him so tight. I was nervous. I didn't even want to change boats. I told Rick to take me in. I don't want to get on the Marine police's. I don't want to get on the helicopter. I said, take me in. And we ended up getting on that one, and they dropped a rescue swimmer on, and he said it was too dangerous with the winds and waves on to put me in a helicopter. So we rowed in by boat, and then they life-flighted me to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, I mean, you had ingested, I don't know how much water out of Mississippi Sound. That's got to be
that was I mean, my mouth was dry. It was just, yeah, they gave me a water on the boat, and
awesome.
Yeah, very good. So you know, they put me in the helicopter, and like I said, man, I was able to kind of eyeball around, and I'm just overwhelmed the amount of people. I could list them all here. From just, it just wouldn't be fair to do it. But it makes you feel loved. I mean, you know.
Well, when the news went out that you were found, it went out through our Coconut Telegraph, and it was great news. As we wrap up this part of that discussion, you go to the hospital. Obviously, you're sitting with me here. You recovered, and I got back out. And
supposed to be home resting, but I told my wife I can't do it. I can't sit around. But
you should be resting, but you are doing a great service to everybody. Number one, takeaway is thinking about how quickly that happened. Once again, this is a man that has run a boat, you know, his whole life, and doing something to go get a life jacket, to get that put on, and then that it's just a split instant, you're in the water.
Everything, any kind of accident like that happens in a second.
About that. You think you know everything, and then you hear something like this. And then the other part of this is a takeaway, and we've been talking during the breaks, about a life jacket. And maybe, you know, if you don't want to wear a bulky life jacket, those that you wear all day are out there.
Sean, this you know, when I told you I was going to come on, this is not about my survival. I don't want the attention. The whole goal for me to come on or do any kind of interview is to bring attention to a life jacket, whether it's my buddies that are fishing. I can't tell you how many have called or texted already and shot me pictures of, you know, hey, I just went up to Bass Pro Shops because of your story, and I'm going to wear this. And man, that's worth every penny.
Yeah,
the whole story, you know, and I'm going to do it myself. I mean, if you have kids or family, there's nothing worse than that feeling that I got that I would never see them again. And that I don't bulky, whatever, $150. You don't have it. Find a way to get one.
Yeah,
because I've learned my lesson,
and we learned it through you. Thank you for bringing that lesson to us and telling us your story, Kevin. I really appreciate it, and you've helped a lot of people.
Thank you. I hope so.
Kevin Olmstead, our guest. And let that be a lesson to you before you get out on the boat today, the weekend, going forward. Think about that one. All right, we'll do it all again tomorrow for another edition of Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum next.